Welcome to the Data Guru Podcast. We're your hosts, Scarlett Burks
and Laurel Wilhelm Volpe. We will trade off hosting duties this year to bring you a wide range of data experts discussing audience strategy, emerging trends,
and practical ways to boost campaign performance.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Data Guru Podcast. As always, I'm thrilled to be joined by our queen data guru, Linda Harrison, and today our special guest is Joyce Turner, Industry Managing Director for Axiom. Welcome, Joyce and Linda.
Thank you so much, Scarlett. Linda, you finally let me come to the podcast. I'm so excited, right? I am Joyce Turner, and I lead a set of sectors at Axiom, full strategy for those sectors, and they include the what I fondly call my food merchants, and inside of that category box are the convenience stores, restaurants, grocery, food delivery as well, and then our manufacturers and our CPG companies. So they keep me hopping. It's a wonderful set of clients, and it's an exciting time for that entire set of sectors.
I was going to say, Joyce, these last 2 years, there has never been a more important time for the clients that you serve, as our CPG brands being on that shelf when we get there have been so important, as well as some of those quick serve restaurants that have delivered and fed us during the pandemic. So can you talk a little more about the clients you serve and the kinds of challenges that they face?
One of the reasons I have a passion for this book of business is because I have worked at Axiom for over 20 years. And during that time, one of the things that I think Axiom is incredibly well known for is our passion for data and data-driven engagement and intelligent engagement with customers. And these sectors have historically been pretty data-starved. It's a unique dynamic to see, particularly in CPG, where you don't have a lot of direct connections with the customer and you are selling to your clients who happen to be the retailers, right? So with CPG in particular, it's a pretty complex environment. And most of the CPG companies have been brand oriented. By the way, there's nothing wrong with brand. We are advocates for the full marketing funnel, but Axiom in particular has been tremendously impactful for engagement, where we use data to transform the relationships with clients and customers.
Okay, that's great, Joyce. What types of problems are CPG unique? You said they don't have much data around who their customers are. So who can they and how can they reach out to the right people for the right products?
So here's where it gets exciting, right? I said they historically have not had. And you kind of ride a groove of what you've always done because it worked for you at one point. And something has to sometimes shove you in a new direction. And I think that's exactly what happened with our restaurant segments with COVID. And then with our CPG companies, the pending deprecation of third-party cookies, and the impact on them resulting from that means that they have to become significantly more adept at capturing first-party data. And we have some wonderful tools to help them do that. And we also augment what they know to allow addressable audiences to be onboarded to digital platforms using our rich info-based data. So when I think about our CPG companies, they're facing the same horizon that everyone is facing, right? In the fall of next year, 2023, we expect the cookies to deprecate. Apple has already turned off IDFA, and Facebook is no longer collecting data via IDFA data within their ecosystem. So CPG companies are already feeling that impact. They're already struggling with how to collect enough data to then target brand loyalists. I like to say these are the brands that have brand loyalists and don't know who they are, right? They know what they deliver to pick a retailer of choice or a grocer of choice. They know what they deliver to that retailer, but they don't know what's sitting in within my pantry. But you can know more. Passive collection of all engagement data, along with Axiom's rich sources of insights within the data marketplace that's based off of real retail behavior data, allows all of our CPG companies to be really smart in the ecosystem. So it's an exciting time, right? The data share and the scaling of audiences using real transaction behavior along with other tools that we have to collect engagement data and to do that in a privacy compliant way will transform. I have no questions about it. It will absolutely transform the way that CPG brands engage with both their customers and their clients, right? So clients being their retailers and customers being all of those consumers, like all of us who have products sitting in on the shelf.
Are there particular types of data or any niche data that really serves those clients well, or that you're, or that they're beginning to test as maybe an effective tool for them going forward?
The niche data depends on what you're selling, right? I like to talk about Kraft macaroni and cheese, right? So if you, or pick a brand that you love that's always in your pantry, right? So Kraft macaroni and cheese I grew up on. I can't have it the way I once did anymore because my diet won't allow me to partake as frequently as my childhood self might prefer, right? So anyway, but if you look at a Kraft macaroni and cheese who largely sells their product through a retail franchise, not likely. Doesn't mean they can't. Direct to consumer does not make sense, in my opinion, across the entire CPG ecosystem, because I don't personally want to go to, as a consumer, not as a practitioner or a businesswoman or someone who has passion for the business, but just practically speaking, as a consumer, do I want to go to 50 different websites, direct-to-consumer websites, so that I can purchase my grocery? And the short answer is absolutely not. I don't do that today, and it's not what I want to see happen in the future. So when you look at the practicality of how people buy, not how we might prefer they buy, but realistically how they buy and how we purchase and put ourselves in the consumer position, then it's pretty clear that buying data and using consortium data and data sharing is the route that CPG companies will need to take, because they just won't get enough scale, in my opinion. They just won't get enough scale from DTC, even if they deploy those DTC strategies in the near term. So balancing the approach is incredibly important.
Okay, so Joyce, what about share of wallet? Or share of pantry in this case. Is that something that our clients can understand through either some of Axiom data sources or through our partner data, or would they have to go direct to a second party type relationship to get that information?
You know, that's an interesting one. One of the things I think about a lot is category behavior, right? Which frankly, the retailers share that most of the CPG companies have pretty good understanding of share of wallet. And the reason they have a good understanding of share of wallet, not at a person level, right? So we have to define at what level. They have a pretty good view at a top level because they share data within certain consortiums like NPD, Nancy Paul David, is one of the places where they do data sharing. And then the large retailers also provide tools so that you can see what product you have on shelf and the pace at which you're selling so that they can deliver products just in time. So again, if we pick a retailer, doesn't matter whom, but let's pick Walmart since they are so well known for their supply chain management. Walmart does not want the Kraft macaroni and cheese or Colgate or Cottonelle to ship product any sooner than they absolutely need it. There's an entire supply chain doing just in time. So there's a lot of info share when it comes to top level dynamics there, Linda, that feed share wallet. You can see that at the top level. You just can't see it very well when you are trying to assess an individual consumer or household, right? Like that's a frontier where I believe there's opportunity to mix together people data and category and top level spend data so that the entire ecosystem has more context than what they have right now. And that's an opportunity for all, right? For those ecosystems as well as for us, those of us who are fans of data-driven enterprises.
So then that pretty much covers CPG in a really broad space. How is the fast casual dining and quick serve restaurants different or similar to CPG in that regard? They might know who I am, but they might not, because I'm just going through the drive-through lane at Taco Bell.
So I love models that are fascinating to watch. So here's a model that restaurants probably did not see coming, right? We just talked about how CPG companies sell through a retail franchise. A food delivery service is the equivalent of a retailer serving many restaurants. They have found themselves, because of shifting market dynamics, in the position where, again, pick your favorite service. I'll pick DoorDash today, right? So DoorDash then might have more information about if Linda is a fan of DoorDash and uses DoorDash either for pickup or delivery on a regular basis. DoorDash knows more about Linda's cross-brand shopping behavior than any of those brands. And here's what's funny, right? I said earlier that I am a huge fan of full funnel marketing. Brand marketing makes a lot of sense. Brand marketing has also led both CPG companies and restaurants, if we're looking at fast casual or QSR, to the same precipice at the same time. They didn't pay attention to collecting first party data. It's really fascinating, right? For different reasons. Restaurants didn't do it because they counted on all of us to show up, and they did big brand marketing. The big brand marketing then drove certain buying patterns within the brick and mortar restaurant, and they were all good. And then COVID happened, and then cookie deprecation happens. So what's really interesting is that restaurants now find themselves in the same shoes that a lot of CPG companies find themselves having dealt with for decades, in that someone else is hijacking the customer relationship, right? And those someone else's are doing quite well, and they have a value prop. Remember what I said earlier, that I don't want to, as a consumer, go to 50 different brand websites to purchase my grocery. What's interesting is I don't necessarily want to go to 50 different restaurant sites either. I have to admit, right, I have a suite of restaurants. Some are favorites, right? But I don't eat the same ones every single day or every single week. So I think that's kind of the American way, right? If I am U.S. centric, we have broad-based needs and broad-based buying behaviors. And anyone who makes that easier for me wins. So restaurants have to get in control of their first-party data. They have to take advantage of third-party insights so that they can see mix, that they can see what they don't have inside of their own infrastructures. And unfortunately, many of them just didn't connect or collect a lot of data. They used the point of sale to collect payment, right? So when we look back at QSR and restaurants and fast casual, fine dining, they all really have the same problem. They now have a new intermediary between them and the customer, and that has business impact. And none of them consistently collected first-party data. It's fascinating, right? But they are essentially finding themselves in a reverse situation to CPG, where they didn't have to worry about that before. Post-COVID, they have to worry about it a lot.
That is really awesome. I wonder what's going to be next. Who's going to either have an intermediary or have one removed? What's your prediction, Joyce? Do you have any ideas on what's going to happen? Maybe in financial services. I mean, credit cards already have that to a certain extent, right? Because we have players like Luxury Card that act as that intermediary between the consumer and the brand.
I would expect that there are certain acquisitions that's going to happen. Right. If I get it right, I do believe Shipt is already owned by Target, if I have the right company. So when you look at, I spent some time with the Shipt people in the fall of last year at Grocery Shop. And at least for now, their parent is content with allowing them to run pretty much as a standalone startup. Will that continue? Probably not, right? I think what you'll see over time are more tightly integrated services between delivery services in this situation and those companies, right? Now, who buys whom is the question, right? So in the restaurant space, I think you have to be looking at, if you can afford it, that's the hard part, right? A conglomerate who owns restaurants has to be looking at food delivery services. And do I buy them or do they buy me, right? That becomes part of the question, right? I could see that happening in any way. I think you have to look at that, though. I think the ecosystem is forcing that. And then I personally think on the CPG front that there are some places where CPGs need to contemplate some additional consortiums for data sharing in a privacy compliant way and for without compromising their competitive position. That's the hard part, right? Like even when you can see a benefit in collaboration, my intellectual property is so valuable that I might not go there, right? But there are up and comers that will throw off data. There will be data providers because Axiom's always looking at additional data points that we can insert to provide additional insights, right? The Internet of Things is going to be fascinating for all of our CPG companies. When you have an environment, which we are rapidly approaching, where your coffee maker is a connected device that can track my consumption behavior, the device owner now has information that I covet. So CPG companies, I'm seeing some of this happen with some innovations right now. Just look at Keurig Dr. Pepper, right? Or Keurig more specifically. Keurig has a machine that brews coffee. They make more money off the K-cups. Let's be clear, right? So the first investment, obviously they make money off the device itself, and the device itself has value. The coffee maker has value for all of us night owls who need a cup of joe in the morning. But the residual income is way more significant than the initial purchase, right? So all those K-cups in over a certain period of time, depending on how fast you're drinking, eclipses the original money that was gained on the Keurig device. So now I know if I'm Keurig that I could put Scarlett on an auto ship and take a burden off of her hands, or Linda on auto ship and take a burden off of her hands. She doesn't have to worry about purchasing K-cups because I'm handling that for her. The same is true for light bulbs, plug-in outlets, and smart TVs might be one of my favorite. They function pretty much like app devices now and cell phones. So if you ask me, the horizon for CPG is look at devices. What you can know off of devices is going to be as much or more than what you can currently see from retail. So paying attention to what's going on in devices and then acquisitions. The ecosystem will become ripe for a set of consolidations. The only question is who will buy whom, right? I have no question that there will be acquisitions. It's just, you know, which direction will those acquisitions head and who then will choose to consolidate in order to maintain dominance. I think there are others who have predicted that in the case of the restaurant sectors, that a DoorDash and a Uber Eats and a, you know, Anna, right, whatever, that there would have already been some consolidation there. Hasn't happened yet. So that's interesting to watch, right? Do you consolidate, you know, across delivery providers because it makes you more of a giant, or do you consolidate with a restaurant cluster because that could create some clear dominance in your service? That remains to be seen. But acquisition is certain. It's just a matter of who's going to buy whom.
Awesome. So Joyce, we like to end our podcast with a little quirky question. So since you're all things food, your question is, what food did you despise in your childhood, but now you like it pretty well?
You know what? I thought this was going to be tough. That is actually a very easy one. I don't know if despise was the quite the word, but definitely not my favorite. Popeye the Sailor Man was Mr. Spinach, right? So spinach in the can is not like that appetizing necessarily until you figure out how to make it in 100 different ways, right? So spinach is the surprise. Fresh spinach is in my pantry right now, in my refrigerator right now. I abide by the bundles, right? You know, and I eat spinach on a good week, a week where I am following my plan. I eat spinach 2 or 3 times a week. I cannot believe it. It was a rare occurrence in my childhood, but it's absolutely now one of my favorite foods.
That's great. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us, and we look forward to having you on the show next time.
Thank you. I love the podcast, and I can't wait to see what topics get covered this year. So thank you for the invite.